Welcome to Friday Night Party Line. I'm your host, Victor Frost, and tonight we are back in the new year, 2014, and we are raring and ready to go. Tonight on the show, we have, par usual, we have our awesome Australian, Sherba.
Xin Yang Hao. Happy New Year, everybody, for Chinese New Year.
Happy Chinese New Year's. We've got our very intelligent New Yorker. We've got Nelson. Hey, Nelson.
I have three wires connected to my face.
donning his Google Glass. And another person with Google Glass, Fade. Welcome back to the show.
Evening. So Nelson's got a pair too?
Yeah. My God. Nelson's got glass.
You know. Have two explorers.
Mm-hmm. And I'm really happy, and not completely unrelated to the show, but Thade is not the only person now with a 3D printer on the show. I am now the proud owner of a 3D printer. It just got here today. I'm so excited.
Wait a minute. Thade hasn't been the only one with a 3D printer on this show for months. I've had one sitting in my living room for ages.
What did you...
I did. I had it on the show.
What?
I waved it around in front of the camera and everything.
I don't remember that at all.
Victor, you forget. Chirba lives in the future.
Oh, that's right. Chirba lives in the future. Yeah, yeah. All right, well, we got a bunch of topics that are interesting today, and I am I'm excited to get them going in here as soon as I can locate them. Ah, yes. Right. So, one of the interesting things, and this is a particularly prescient considering our guests, is that technology and the changes in society that it causes, in terms of just their mere presence, in turn creates some cultural changes that are somewhat necessary. One really good example of this is that earlier this month, Homeland Security agents held up a moviegoer who was wearing Google Glass. And I don't know why it was Homeland Security agents, but this guy who was wearing Google Glass was pulled out of his was pulled out of the movie theater, and basically they were questioning him about illegally taping the movie, even though he was doing no such thing. So, I mean, it's really some changes that are going to be required when we start walking around with cameras on our faces. And I know we've kind of said this earlier many times in the show, but having some nice examples of it now that glass has been out in the wild for a good long time is really interesting. What do you guys think about how this is going to impact us, or how we or how culture may need to change?
The movie theater guy admitted, though, that he was an idiot for taking a camera into a movie theater. I mean, you just have to realize that you have a camera strapped to your head. You can't go into a movie theater with that. So that was kind of a non-issue, except that it was a Homeland Security guy that did it, and that's just offensive. I mean, the MPAA is using Homeland Security to enforce copyright stuff? Really?
Yeah, well, they've been using the FBI to do it for a long time, so.
Right.
I don't know. Nelson, you are another glass wearer. What do you got on this?
I mean, glass right now has this societal perception that it is... It's strange, because it's, like, when I wear it around, which I don't do very often.
Neither.
But I'll... Mostly because they don't fold up. Like, whenever they, in whatever future revision they have where it folds up and you can put it in a pocket or something, I'll actually start wearing it around.
Oh, wait, it doesn't fold? It doesn't fold like a pair
yet,
of glasses?
No.
It's quite like rigid. It's
really?
Quite rigid, yeah. There's no folding. And they give you this little man purse.
You have a little sack, the glass sack.
The little sack that you put it in and... That's
the
how
glass,
you
go
really?
About business. Yeah, the glass sack is about maybe 2 centimeters too wide for my inner jacket pocket.
Huh. I was just kind of...
Literally, the first thing I would do would be cut through the frame.
Yeah, I mean, there's no...
warranty.
There's no technological reason why it can't fold. They'd have to probably rearrange certain things, but I'm sure it's coming eventually. So my point is, I don't wear it around that often, but when I do, it's about half and half approval and, like, kind of odd, you know, oh, can I try it on? How is it? Blah, blah, blah.
Mm.
Actually, it's about 70% positive, 30%. Are you taking a video of me right now? What are you doing? You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
In that case.
I wanted to wear it in Cleveland. I don't really want the attention.
Yeah.
As someone who, you know, makes a public record of things for a living, the best answer for that is, no, you're boring.
I always like the saying no, but they are, and then pointing to whatever security camera is nearby.
Yeah, that's also a good one.
It's glass. It's so shiny.
I think, I mean, as with a lot of things, remember iPads when they came out?
Hmm.
And how culturally inappropriate they were?
No.
Like, to have?
No, I don't recall that at all. Why would they have been culturally inappropriate to have?
It might be like a New York subway thing, but it was perceived until maybe in the last year or so that if you carried an iPad onto the subway, you wanted it to be stolen.
I just put the sunglasses on. For the first time, I feel like Stevie Wonder.
You look like Stevie Wonder. Especially if you keep bobbing around like that.
Nowadays, I see tourists walking around taking photos by holding their iPads up.
Oh, to that I cannot abide.
Yeah. But it's not... It's not really a thing anymore.
Nah.
In the same way that, you know, white earbuds, no one cares.
Nah.
Right now, glasses at the point, at the stage of societal acceptance where, you know, people, white earbuds were when they came out. And everyone, you know, some people were like, ooh, white earbuds. And other people were like, I'm going to steal your iPod.
I think it's going to be... very much like the people that wear their Bluetooth headsets all the time.
Hmm.
That's what I fear it's going to end up from a style perspective is like, oh, look at the dork that doesn't take his Google Glass off.
Yeah, that's the potential a potential avenue that I hope it doesn't go in.
Yeah.
I feel like the kind of person who wears glass is less is perceived to be less specific as the type of person who wears a Bluetooth headset. Like the type of person, you know, in our cultural lexicon who wears a Bluetooth headset is an asshole businessman who wants you to think that he's important. Like there are
Where do the people who use the Bluetooth phone handsets fall in?
Oh, those people are my friends. Those people, if I see one of those people on the street, I immediately befriend them. They know what's up. But I think while the kind of range of people that are using glass and, you know, have interest in glass is still very, very terribly narrow.
Yeah.
It's, you know, primarily rich white dudes. It's not as narrow as, you know, early Bluetooth adopters.
Mm. Hmm. Yeah.
To be honest, like, approximately, call it, 70% of the people I know who have glass are basically just young dudes, white dudes, making a fair bit of money in New York. So, I can see where you're coming from with that. It doesn't seem to have the widest appeal at this point. It's just techie sort of people.
Well, they're only letting 8,000 people have them yet. They haven't opened it up.
Yeah, that's... from what I've seen and from people I've talked to, the people that are interested in it is more than just, you know, the people that are on the Google buses that people are protesting.
Yes, the Google bus thing.
Yeah.
They have to do so much more with Glass before they release it, though. I mean, this is a beta.
Oh, yeah.
Barely a beta. I did take a call using it today, and that's the one thing I found that it is phenomenal at, is because, you know, like with a Bluetooth headset, you still got the thing sticking in your ear. You always feel like it's going to fall out, and they can't hear you, and you can barely hear them. Glass is fantastic for being the most expensive Bluetooth headset in the world.
I did a hangout with another friend of ours who wears Glass. And we both hung out with each other, but we realized we could only see what each other were seeing. So I stepped in front of a mirror, and he opened like FaceTime or a photo booth on his computer. So we could actually see who we're talking to.
Wow.
No.
Although, I have to say, looking into a mirror to do the, like, to talk with someone who I can then see is kind of cool. It's kind of like magic mirror-y, a little bit of, like, you know, techno fantasy, I guess is the word.
I wouldn't call that a techno fantasy. That doesn't. It sounds a little less optimal than I'd like.
It's a magic mirror,
kind of. But
Have you never seen a Disney movie?
I have. I just think it's like. All right. Well, moving away from Glass, but still staying on the same topic. Nest, which makes those wonderful little internet connected thermostats for your house. Was bought by Google. Surprise, surprise. Google's going om nom nom with a whole bunch of interesting companies. But I guess today or yesterday they spat out most of Motorola. Anyways, Google has bought Nest, and one of the big things Nest's CEO was saying was that it was going to keep the Nest databases, the information that Nest collects, away from Google's database of stuff. Which I think, yeah, it's nice now, but it's going to be, you know, commingled in very soon after.
Larry Page is going to be sitting there, you know. Yeah, he's waiting. Know what people set their thermostats to.
Well, it's not just the setting the thermostat. Rob, do you use the Nest thermostat? Do you have one? No. Have you ever? Okay. Well, what it does is that it's not just collecting what it doesn't just keep track of what temperature you keep the thermostat at, but it also has a little motion sensor so it knows when people are in the house. Ooh. So, having that kind of information, what it does is that it gets sort of a feel of the pattern of when people are in the house and, you know, adjust the thermostat to save energy accordingly when people aren't typically in the house.
I see.
So, having that kind of information, I think, would be really interesting to kind of mash that kind of massive amount of information up with other Google-type services. But I think but my question is, why is it such a big concern for people to keep it away from the Google database? That's another kind of interesting cultural aspect to this. Why is it a big deal?
Because people are hyper paranoid about Google because they're a very large company with a lot of data and a lot of
that's all, folks.
Ability to process data. Because people think Google is like the biggest, evilest dude on the planet somehow.
Well, they are.
Like Larry Page sitting there, like, looking up Mark Zuckerberg's Nest and just, like, turning up his heat all the time.
They are buying up robotics companies and AI companies.
I'm all about them buying up the robotics companies and stuff.
Yeah, I am totally in favor of this. I am so in... This is going to be a somewhat unpopular opinion among a lot of people, but I am at least 99% in favor of Google's current direction.
I want like the androids from Almost Human. I want that. I want that, and I want Ghost in the Shell androids.
Yeah. I want to be a Ghost in the Shell android.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Getting technology and concentrating it and throwing just like a ton of money at it, like Google can do, is one of the best ways to spur on more development and further advancement.
The only thing I'm actually not into about Google gobbling up all these companies is that they've bought up a company called Boston Dynamics.
Oh, yes.
Who make robots mostly aimed at military use.
This is true.
And that makes Google a defense contractor now temporarily while they finish out those contracts. I'm not worried about them being a defense contractor, frankly, making robots. Because, you know, whatever. Who cares?
Like you do. Yeah.
You know, they bought the company that had the contracts. They went into that knowingly. But the thing that I'm not so keen on is that they're then saying, yeah, then we are not renewing those contracts. And I figure, why not? It's not like Boston Dynamics are going to be making robot soldiers anytime soon. And
I don't know.
Well,
the units they're making are extremely useful for soldiers in the field. Carrying all sorts of gear around that normally they wouldn't be able to carry through terrain that you can't bring a vehicle through.
And again, like what Nelson was saying, this is going to be a very unpopular opinion for a lot of people, and it's, you know, a lot of people disagree with it, but I am entirely in favor in robots becoming part of the theater of war. The less humans out there, and there's a very good counter argument to this, but the less humans out there, the better I think it is for war in general. And then people will come back and say, well, you know, you're taking the humanity out of warfare. Where's the risk? Blah, blah, blah.
That's a good thing.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
If you're worried about taking
the humanity out of war, you've never been.
I think that invading armies should rape and pillage cities, because our current tactics of not killing all the civilians we meet is really taking the humanity out of warfare.
It's taking the fun out of war.
DARPA is interesting, though. For the listeners, all of those really famous Boston Dynamics contracts were with the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. And it's an interesting agency because they're pushing ahead science and technology so much, but they're also an arm of the military. And while a lot of their projects are to, you know, save soldiers' lives and make the business of war not as deadly, at least for our side, a lot of their projects are offensive in both senses of the word.
And, you know, but and on the same token, a lot of their projects are relatively good for civilian life, too. They they hosted numerous contests for self-driving cars.
Made the internet?
Internet,
they
yeah.
They still are, in fact.
Yeah. So they're like half, ooh, NASA, good, and half, ooh, DOD, huh?
Laser weapons.
Laser weapons are good no matter how you look at it. They're just too,
DARPA
they're just too
is
cool.
Lawful neutral.
Yes, they're lawful neutral. That's about
Here's
right.
Here's the funny thing about DARPA's self-driving car competition. If the Google self-driving car entered, it would lose immediately, even if it wasn't disqualified because of rule sets regarding, you know, the car itself.
Right.
Because it turns out that the Google self-driving cars can only go in certain places where they've run certain equipment through to map everything out.
Yeah.
And DARPA only revealed the track to the participants. Pardon me. Only revealed the track to the participants, I think it's the same day or the day before they go out.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, well, it's a different use case. The DARPA one is like, take this dirt road and go off road here and climb this mountain and stuff with the cars. And the Google self-driving car is, you know, city where there's lots of, you know, common visual indicators to indicate what the car should probably do next. So
yeah, it's like a case of actual self-driving car as opposed to a car that drives around following a set map sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's just that you get to pick where it goes on the map.
Yeah.
Well, I think
you go
the
outside
idea,
that map, you're boned.
I think the idea is if you expand the map to truly be a one-to-one map of the Empire, as Umberto Eco wrote, you shouldn't have to drive off the map. Like, Google's cars are never going to be off-road vehicles.
No.
Until they build their true AI.
Which, with that company they bought...
Yeah? For driving on roads, I think they'll be fine.
If you're on the continent of North America, if you drive off the map, aren't you just in the ocean?
We actually have inland oceans full of grass. They're vast plains of nothingness and despair.
Deserts too, yeah.
Your deserts are kind of punsy, though.
Your country is like three-quarters desert. What do you want?
Yes, and we're also like three-quarters the size of the continental U.S. We're only maybe 2 or 3 million square kilometers short.
Yeah. We're mostly grasslands and plains.
Going back to those...
Here's a quick quiz.
Right.
You know, the sensor arrays on those cars, that's what they need in glass. They need radar, they need infrared, they need faster processors. That would really help glass be some sort of assistant to you as opposed to an expensive decoration.
It would also be great because you'd have applications like, hey, blind people don't need guide dogs anymore.
Yeah, ooh. That
would be fantastic.
That's a good one.
Put LIDAR,
exactly
stick a LIDAR unit on some guy's head.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It's coming.
Nothing Google the first LIDAR thrower is going to be a hella hat. Actually, here is a quick quiz for you.
Okay.
My city, Brisbane, and Nelson City, New York City. New York City is more populous, but which one is bigger?
L.A.
I'd say Brisbane is probably bigger, physically.
Yep. New York is about 300 or 400 square miles. Brisbane is about 2,500 square miles. This place is huge.
Yeah. Is it as big as L.A.? I don't know how big L.A. is.
Well, we could consult Glass.
Right there.
Yes, do the Google Glassing thing.
I am.
I'll vamp.
Capital and most populous city in the state of Queensland. How about that? I did not know any of those things.
Mm.
I did.
I would hope.
I love that Google's first description of LA is Los Angeles is irregularly shaped and covers a total area of 502 square miles.
Only 502.
But that is the city of Los Angeles as opposed to Los Angeles County, which most people call LA. So
only
actually, here's an interesting question.
What?
If you look up an Australian city on Google and it pops up the little pop-out box for Wikipedia,
right on.
Does it show you the size in kilometers squared or miles squared?
Let's find out.
I would imagine it depends
on which
Wikipedia.
Miles squared.
Does it link to the Wikipedia for your geographic area?
The pop-out isn't a Wikipedia pop-out. It is a Google pop-out, but it has like a little Wikipedia description in it. So, it links to English Wikipedia in America in .org, which I can only assume is just for America. I don't know what Australian top-level domain name is. So,
you know, Brisbane looks like Pittsburgh.
Huh.
I'm actually kind of insulted, considering I'm being
Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh insulting.
It's a little dirty.
Looks just like Detroit.
Well, from the Riverside.
Wow, Nelson. Wow. That's mean.
I'm going to fight you one of these days.
This is really... I'm interested in Brisbane.
While Victor is introducing us to our...
Well, yeah, I was just actually about to say, just before we get to that even section of the show, I didn't have a... actually, come to think of it, now I just do have a thing of the day for the show. But we're going to link to the Wikipedia article on Brisbane. So next topic is going to be data kind of wants to be free, doesn't it? I mean, that's a phrase that gets pushed around in the tech spheres and stuff. Ooh, data wants to be free.
It doesn't get pushed around. It wants to be free. That phrase itself wants to be free.
Yeah, the phrase wants to be free. And it sort of occurs to me that in talking about the Nest, I actually referred to the article I originally intended for this topic, but it worked well enough. But how do we, like, having data in massive databases, we have weather data that is collected by NOAA and all these other little weather stations. We have traffic data that's collected for example, in Waze, one of Waze's best features. If you're not familiar with Waze, it's like it's an app for your iPhone or your Android phone. It's basically like a navigation program. Waze collects your general speed and what highway you're on, and it uses that to predict where there's a lot of congestion and stuff like that. There's all this data kind of like floating around. But for a lot of people, like for example, my school has a weather station, but the data from that weather station isn't accessible. For whatever reason, we have seismometers on campus. That information is not available to just anybody. And yet there is clearly a want for more information like this, because we can do just so much with this information. How do you guys feel about information being sort of bottled up like that? Is it a good thing? Should there be some amounts of proprietary data streams that aren't available? Or should all information just be sort of accessible to the ether with respect to like privacy constraints and stuff like that?
Well, yeah, I was just thinking maybe we should modify this saying a bit, considering that nowadays there's a lot of privacy concerns and things like that. People want to keep certain information private. So, yeah, information wants to be free, but some of it is just a little bit shy.
I like that. Information wants to be free, but some of it's a little shy. Okay.
All of that stuff you talked about, Victor, who's paying for it? I mean, if it's the government that's paying for it, then we're paying for it.
Well, I'm paying for it. My tuition's paying for the stuff at my school.
Right, but...
I'm paying for shit.
Not quite the same. Gerba, I have to ask you, what is it that you are smoking?
Oh, I'm trying to actually cut down and or quit actual tobacco, because I do smoke cigarettes on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. And I ended up getting myself a vaporizer. It's just a neat little unit there about the length of my hand or maybe a long pen. And it's got a little heating coil in the top of this tank, and it uses a silicon wick to pull nicotinized liquid up through that wick into the vaporizer, and then it outputs.
It is nicotine you're smoking then, because you've smoked other things in the past on this show.
I have not actually partaken in any illegal drugs while I was on this show.
No, Trevor would never do that. Not on the show.
Before and after?
The archive video, Victor.
He's drank while on the show, that's for sure, but he has never he's never partaken in any illicit materials while
I've drank while I'm on the show, and I have taken illegal drugs before the show, but not during.
Okay.
So as there's no evidence.
Yes, I'll tell you more about it later on and give you some better video and images and things.
Of the illicit substances?
It's quite a cool little unit. You can actually modify them for that, but I'm not going to.
Well, good for you, Chirp. I'm glad you're getting rid of tobacco. That's good. Good.
Well, not entirely. I'll still smoke the occasional cigar and pipe and things like that, because a man must have his vices.
Yes.
Yes.
And also, I just really like smoking sometimes. So.
No, I know. I smoke cigars. That's great.
Yeah.
I know I have my
expensive down here. Though.
I know, you know, I have my vice kind of around here. I just gotta. I've been looking for it.
Your pony collection?
What, no, what? No. Hold on. I'm gonna grab my vice.
Oh God, I'm not sure.
He's no, I think I really hope it's an actual vice.
Yeah,
it's like, probably going to be.
It's a long way to go for that, but you know.
While he's gone, I really like. Heinlein's For Us the Living is kind of a retro-futuristic tale about what he thought the future would be like in, I want to say, the 50s or early 60s. And two of the things in there are really interesting. The first one is social credit, which we now know as minimum income. And that's become a big deal in international politics recently. But the other one is the idea of the public and private sphere. Mm. And it's a pretty common idea, but in the book, it's very codified. Mm-hmm. Where your interactions with people, like, it is, I think there are laws on the books that say, okay, well, if you say, if recorded information is in your private sphere, it cannot be rebroadcast under, legal penalties. Hmm. But the information that is not in your private sphere can and should be broadcast everywhere. And it kind of, it gives people in that society a framework for understanding their privacy that I don't think we have. Like, a lot of people right now think that, things they post on Facebook are private, or things they post on Twitter are private. When they're really not.
It's too bad that Ray Vasvari isn't here, because he could talk about public disclosure of private facts. We do have a tort in the United States where I can't just go digging in your garbage and then find out something that's embarrassing about you and then publish that. You could sue me for doing something like that. So to an extent, our legal framework allows for that now.
Yeah, we have a I'm not sure if it's tort law or not, but I'm reasonably sure that we do have existing precedent for that here as well.
Mm-hmm. You know, Liberace would sue everybody who said that he was gay, and he would win like time after time after time. And so people stopped hassling him about it because of that public disclosure of private facts concept.
Hmm.
Actually, speaking of people, I mean, I think that if you look at the span of Freddie Mercury's career and his appearances on stage and things like that, you hit this middle point where, like, he starts to go kind of stranger and stranger with his onstage costumes and things.
Yeah.
And my personal theory is that at that point he was actually just trying to convince people he was gay, because I only thought about this a little while ago because my father mentioned that he only found out Freddie Mercury was gay after he died.
You know what really surprised me? That people ever thought that, God, what's his name? He was in Wham.
George Michael?
George Michael. What surprises me is that people ever thought George Michael wasn't gay.
Right.
Anyways, I couldn't find my actual vice, but I do have a picture of my vice.
Let's have a look here.
Is it time for a visual gag?
Well,
not just that, but a visual gag that is linked to only us. We're stepping it up. We're making our visual gags slowly more obscure to anyone outside of the show. Oh, yeah, that's not a bad little third-hand vice.
That's my vice.
A little, probably looks like it's going to be about 5 inches tall, Panavice.
Yeah.
Little desk mount.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, it's around here somewhere, but for those of you who may be a little bit slightly confused in listening to this, it is my vice was a bit of a gag. It is an actual mechanical workbench vice. That is my vice. So,
I hate to tell you, Victor, but I think we gave it away when you left.
Yeah.
We figured it out.
Okay.
Part of a,
yeah. I know it wasn't that hard of a thing. Anyways.
Well, so, I mean, if you keep accumulating vices like that, you'll have a real problem.
I had that one, but I just saw this tinier one in the store. I'm like, maybe I need another vice.
No, what you should do is you should just get a succession of gradually smaller vices and then just put them inside of each other. Like a little just mazooka.
Stack them up.
No, just clamp them in each other's jaws.
Have a tower of vices.
I used to have the tower of pimps, but I used to have a bench vice, and literally the only thing I ever used it for was cracking macadamia nuts.
Macadamia nuts are terrible. Thade's got his dog.
So you get him too.
Oh, God.
Yeah, true.
Thade is being attacked with kisses by his dog there. That's adorable.
This is the dog version of, is that Google Glass?
Is that Google Glass? Can I put it on?
Actually, that is a question that I must ask, because I know Scott Rubin of Geek Nights gets this question from time to time, and he fucking hates it. But how about you guys? Do you get asked on a regular basis, is that Google Glass?
Yes.
I have not worn mine in public, because I don't really want to interact with other people. Yeah.
Alex Levitt, a friend of mine here in Los Angeles and another person on the Geek Nights forum, also has Google Glass, and he gets asked that a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you're going to wear this stupid thing in your head, then you deserve to be asked that, I think.
Oh, come on.
No,
I mean, you're going to get asked, but saying anything deserves to be asked.
If you are in a public place, it is your broadcasting public social signals.
It's public knowledge.
It is. And talking to people in a public place, you know, if it's not harassment, should be encouraged. Especially, yeah. I mean, in my case, I live in a city where no one talks to each other.
Nope. That is definitely New York.
No one. The most interaction I have with people on the street is bums and maybe a confused tourist, if I'm lucky. Like, no one talks to each other. Well, you know, in certain circumstances, yes. But I think if you're signaling that you want to interact with people, that signaling is... you know, if people interact with you because of that signaling, then that's how it should work.
Yep.
What's been Scott Rubin's experience with it? Has he found anything useful at all? That's what I'm struggling with. I mean, actually,
he has.
Taking phone calls.
He's been doing a lot of videos of Netrunner games and Netrunner tutorials and things like that, putting out a lot of video content. And they're actually really high quality. The sound is reasonably decent. I mean, I'm not going to say it's fantastic, but, you know, I do have a higher threshold for these things than normal. It's certainly definitely acceptable.
Mm.
The video itself is quite clear. You can quite clearly see what he's doing. He takes photos around occasionally, so does Rim as well. In my G+ feed, I get occasional photos from him just, you know, around New York.
Mm.
Things like that. So, yeah, they seem to be finding, well, admittedly, Scott more than Rim, as far as I know. I think Rim's worn it skiing, but I don't know how useful it was.
Yeah. I'm going to be in McCall, Idaho, in a couple of weeks, and I'm going to wear it skiing. If it still works by then.
I think an interesting application that should be possible for Google Glass is that recently Google released this ability for people to make custom Street View-esque tours with their own images. I think having a glass app that would, at an interval, take a picture of what's in front of you as you're going through like a route or something would be really good for that kind of application. That'd be kind of cool.
That would be pretty cool. Hmm. Although I find it interesting the difference in reaction between seeing someone with something like glass or a camera,
yeah, huh?
Versus seeing a Google Street View car or a person with the big, you know, 360 camera backpack.
Yeah.
I feel like for some reason the latter is more culturally acceptable.
Yeah, because
maybe
it is
not the camera backpack, because I think people would see that and just be like, "What the hell is he doing?"
Well, yeah, that's true.
They just see some sort of weird, like, eyeball on a stick that this dude's carrying around in his backpack, and instead of going over and saying, "Is that Google Street View for walking or something?" they would say, "That guy's got some weird shit on his back. We better not mess with him."
Is it Google Street Walk?
It would. It's still Google Street View.
Street Walk.
Google Street Walk.
Employees. That's it. That's their next profit center.
That's the secondary use of the Google buses.
Actually, you know, I would be 100% okay with Google getting into like actual literal prostitution and opening brothels, but you know, I think that would actually be a really good thing for the sex industry, having such a large and respected company as Google behind brothels and prostitution.
Oh, sure. And you can search for your particular preference of prostitute within your local vicinity, and it'll pop up on Google Maps.
Larry Page will be looking at what you're doing, and he'll pick one out.
Hi, based on your browser history, we've noticed you have a preference towards blondes. There are 5 blonde prostitutes in your vicinity.
Right. Or you can call up the brothel madam, and she's got Google Glass, and she can just look at the girls on like a video call with you. Before you head out.
Do you like
this one? Do you like her? Do you like Tiffany or Amber?
That's the killer app.
You'd like to select Amber? Lovely. We'll set an appointment.
Gentlemen, we are revolutionizing the prostitution industry as we speak.
Astounding.
Anyways, moving right along to our final topic here. So Bill Nye is going to have... Yeah, Bill Nye, the science guy. He's going to be having a debate with...
Hold on.
Hold your horses. We're getting there. Bill Nye is going to be having a debate with Ken Ham. Ken Ham. Oh, God.
Wait, what Ken
Ham? Ken
Ham. Oh, my God.
Ham.
He's debating Ken Ham?
Yeah.
That is a waste of time.
Yeah. Ken Ham about creationism versus evolution. How do we feel about this?
Seriously? This panel?
How much is Bill Nye getting paid for this?
I don't think he is.
What?
I don't think he is.
I would do it if I were being paid for it. Like, it's not... You know,
Bill woke up one morning and figured out that people in the South still believe in God, and it bothered him.
Yeah.
But you can't change their minds, so you shouldn't try. It just bothers them and makes everybody uncomfortable.
Well, here's the thing. A lot of people have been putting up the very reasonable... ideas and opinion that this is a very bad idea for multiple reasons, among them being that it's being held in a creationist museum, which will be bringing funding to the creationist museum. It is lending creationism legitimacy. It is bringing the ridiculousness of creationism as a legitimate thing to a public eye, because Bill Nye is a celebrity. But on the same...
I thought you were about to say science guy.
Because he is a celebrity. But the flip side of this, and this is part of the argument that Bill Nye has made as his explanation as to why he's doing this, is that, look, even if one person sees this and is swayed by this debate to, if not change their position entirely, but to at least, or but at the very least, to lend this some serious thought and to consider really consider moving away from creationism to believing, to trusting in the evolutionary model, then it's worth it.
I will bet you $1,000 that not a single person who attends that debate in person changes their views dramatically.
Oh, no, I wouldn't make that bet. It's the there's no question that it's not going to happen if you're attending that. But this is, I'm thinking it's more along the line, because let's face it, if anyone's attending this debate, they already are very strongly entrenched in their position to get up and go to this debate. But I think more for people who watch this debate online, follow the, say, oh, this is a lot of hoopla going on. Oh, Bill Nye, I remember watching him as a kid. Well, what does he have to say about creationism or evolution or whatever? And watches the debate and like, huh, maybe what? It's...
Even then, I don't think... That is
I've met smart people who are good at their jobs, who are otherwise, you know, you would think they were completely rational people who firmly believe that the Earth is 5,000 years old.
Yeah.
And, you know, I when I was a kid, I would fight and I would argue and I would, and it's just a waste of time. It's just a waste of time. Let people believe what they want to believe. It really doesn't matter in the end anyway. We're all dead, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not just like, oh, there's some smart people who tend to believe in creationism. There's also a weird thing where it seems that the leading figures of the creationist movement tend to be incredibly smart people. I mean, Ken Ham, for example, has more qualifications in biology than Bill Nye does. Ken Ham is an environmental biologist, for fuck's sake.
Right.
He got his degree, like, basically down the road from me at the University of Queensland. I just realized how horrible that sounds for the University of Queensland. But they're actually a really good university. It's not their fault.
We'll
He's
take your word for it.
Nutter. But, you know, I believe that guy, what was his name, died recently... Apocalypse 2012 guy, Harold Camping, civil engineer. But I think there's four or five other leading figures in the creationist movement who are electrical engineers, various kinds of engineer, computer scientists, and, you know, engineers of all sorts of flavors.
No physicists, though. No physicists. All you have to do is figure out radiocarbon dating and... You know, it doesn't really make a lot of sense.
Yeah,
also, I think that Ken Ham's the only one who's an actual biologist of any sort.
Yeah.
I don't think that these one-on-one debates... I mean, yes, it's nice to do a few of them. We can, you know, each side can laugh at the foibles of the other. But I don't think... Like, as Thad says, it's not... It doesn't change anything. Mm-hmm. I think the only... The only reason why we should get involved, we being like the you know, skeptical community or whatever, should get involved in, you know, that society, is if their actions, you know, impinge upon what we want to do.
Yeah. Like, well, when. Teaching the crap in public schools.
Well, yeah, that is a good example.
That's an example of it.
You know? Like, when they want to change the curriculum in public schools, that's when you should get involved. When they want to, when, you know, they're elected to high office and they're implementing policy decisions that are based on, you know, crazy talk, that's when you should get involved. But these, you know, one-on-one debates... are meaningless, much like the universe.
Well, yeah. I do think there was at least one positive result, which was that people started, that people dug out that old image of Bill Nye holding up a plastic toy dinosaur saying, oh yeah, you may have breathed the same air as this dinosaur millions of years ago. If you don't think that's the tightest shit ever, then just get out of my face.
You know, and it's really interesting, like, the types of people who ascribe to these this creationist myth. I mean, I can't even say it's really religious people, because my best friend in the whole damn world who I hang out with... What?
Is wrong?
No, no. She is, like, as religious as you can possibly get. But she is under... She makes no bones about the fact that evolution is how it happened. Okay? She is... You know, she's going and pursuing her degree in biology. She's a fantastic artist. And she's like, yeah, you know, God, sure, but creation, evolution. Come on. That's how it is.
It's sort of like, guess. God of the gaps theory.
Yeah, no.
Probably.
No, no, no. She does not believe in God of the gaps. She's not God of
like,
the gaps.
There's no, like, God-guided evolution?
No, she's... I mean, if I recall correctly from our numerous... very good-natured conversations about this. She is of the belief that, you know, the Big Bang happened, yes. Evolution happened, yes. No God of the gaps, none of that bullshit. But
well, like first mover?
But yeah, God as a first mover kind of deal.
Hmm.
And that's a... I mean, as far as I'm concerned, ain't nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough.
Yeah.
So... Oh, yeah, so here is a belief of mine, a deeply held personal belief of mine, that if it was applied to our culture, would have dramatic effects that are probably not in everyone's best interest. I have zero belief in the idea of free will.
Oh, so you believe in a deterministic universe?
On the macro scale, yes.
Okay.
Like, yeah, there's weird stuff happening on the quantum level, but on the macro scale and in our brains, yes.
I agree. Almost completely, I think. Stephen Hawking says that our consciousness is just the software that dances on the neurons that make up our physical brains. And it's all determined by physics. It's all physics.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And therefore, it has to be deterministic. We can calculate it, but it has to.
The like right now, I am in no position to impose my beliefs on, you know, American society.
But someday,
if for example, this hypothetical situation in which there is a coup and someone, not saying it's me, but someone gets absolute authoritarian power. And actually lays out, you know, applies these beliefs to our society, it would be chaos.
It'd be bedlam.
Like,
how could you punish someone?
Yeah, our justice system is based on the idea of free will. Our voting system is based on the idea of free will.
The laws and the incentives and disincentives create probabilities. Just because you don't have free will doesn't mean that laws don't affect behavior.
Well, no. But the idea that someone, you know, the idea of lessening sentences for people when they are not, I don't know the phrase for it, but when they are not intending the crime?
Right.
When there's no intent?
There is no intent. Murder, manslaughter.
Yeah. Things like that. Just are fundamentally incompatible with the way our society works. But I don't go, you know, around creating think tanks to push my lack of belief in free will.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Are you sure you don't want to?
I mean, I want to. I think that if we figured out the problems of creating a society that is... not based on what I think is a fallacious assumption, then, you know, once we figure those out, we could implement some things, but the going ahead and trying to change society based on such a minority belief is ridiculous.
Yeah. But...
Probably.
Chirba, have you got a question?
No, I'm just, you know, stretching my arms a bit. I actually have like a bar directly over.
Oh wait,
my head
yeah, I see it in the mirror.
We're giving each other high fives in space.
Hey.
Nice. So another thing that they need to do to make these better is they need to make the entire thing out of a lithium polymer battery. Every structural point needs to be battery. because the battery life in this is beyond pathetic. I mean, every commentator that's ever put one of these things on has talked about just how rotten the battery life is. But it's, again, physics, another theme of the show, I guess.
Yeah.
You can only pack so many electrons into so much space.
Hold it up sideways for me? Actually, yeah, that was perfect.
Like this?
Yeah. Yeah, I think I can figure out a better way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Rim was going to be using one of those power packs for like cell phones to keep it charged up, extend the battery life. But now he's going to have like a cable running down his neck.
Yeah, that road leads to true nerddom.
Yeah. Maybe just like print like a strap and just like in the battery in the back of the head.
I'm just imagining like that old picture from I think some magazine in the 80s. It must have been the 80s because it was in color and color was only invented in the 70s. But it was like this old, it was from a computing magazine, and it's this dude, he's just strapped down with what looks like about 60 pounds of just various computer crap.
I know that picture.
Like a keyboard on his wrist, like a little chiclet keyboard on his wrist, and a fax printer on his hip, and all this stuff, and it's just labeled future cyberpunk, and I'm just like, I can see Rim with like the 2014 version of that.
Is that a picture of I can't remember his name, but he was the guy who had his headgear stolen at a McDonald's?
No,
definitely a different guy. This is okay. Way before that guy even started building that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you are some random guy. I'm pretty sure you're thinking of a bunch of the members of the MIT Computer Club. And I'm pretty sure that guy works on Glass now.
I would not be surprised.
Yeah. So, have you guys got any news or interesting projects you'd like to bring up before we close out the show?
I think I'm good for now.
Okay. All right.
I've been just trudging along, making JavaScript happen.
Uh-huh. And flipping tables over WordPress, apparently.
This is some news. I've got something to plug. So there is an app called Text Expander for Mac and I believe Windows. And you basically type in certain things and it will expand your text. So you can do something like you can type, sincerely, comma, new line, your name. And instead of having to type all of that, you just type, sincerely. Or I use it for code snippets. There's a bunch of different things you can do with it. Typing in Unicode characters that you don't know the value of.
Ah.
Typing lorem ipsum for me is just lorem 1 or lorem however many paragraphs I want.
Lorem ipsum sidem et dolor.
Yeah. But one thing you can also do is have keywords for emoji.
Uh-huh.
Like, for example, if I type in backtick shrug, you get the dude going like this. And I have found that I use that all the time.
I think instead of that little guy from now on, that little emoji dude, I'm just going to use a tiny little picture of Nelson going like this.
Yeah. It's a good thing I have a 13-year-old daughter. Otherwise, I wouldn't know what an emoji was. But
I only began using them on my Android phone.
My plug is I was originally using Text Expander, the actual app of the same name, for that functionality, but I found a new one that is super fast and I think it is free or it costs like $5. It's called A-Text, A-T-E-X-T, and I highly recommend it. I don't think there's a Windows version.
Sad face.
Yeah.
But if you send them tweets and money, they might do it.
Instead of, you know, the 70s, lawyers, guns, and money, it's tweets and money or something.
A-Text Typing Accelerator Text Macro Utility for Mac?
Yes.
Okay. Mm. So the name should indicate that it is not available for Windows.
Not currently. I believe no. Text Expander is,
works,
but I could be wrong.
Works in Windows via TeamViewer and remote desktop connection clients. That's like, in terms of using software,
that's like middle fingers.
That's like eating like this. That's what it's like.
Yes.
That's funny.
Gerba, you got
that's
something?
Like being fed by someone else, but not in a romantic way. Like in a messy way.
Just like
with
fucking
like one
eat.
Chopstick.
Just eat. Just like throwing the food
just
at your face.
Fucking eat.
Gerba, thing.
Yes.
Have you got one? Have you got a thing?
Yes, but I can't show it on camera because then
I knew you were going to go there. I knew it. Have you got a web accessible item by which you can recommend us them by which you can recommend to the viewers?
Yes, actually, and it is in fact related to both my other thing and the things of many. It's a video that's just been released recently by the APAC, and in association with Kinky.com, called Porn 101, and it is actually safe for work. But basically, what it is pretty much everyone you have ever whacked it to ever. If you have been alive from about 1985 to now,
is in
this video, and they are telling you things not about, you know, how to do the best porn on camera that you can, but it's things like James Dean staring straight down the barrel of the camera and telling you very seriously that you want to file your taxes on time when you're a porn star, because the IRS are not somebody you want to mess with.
That sounds really entertaining.
It is. It is a video by porn professionals
about how to get your footing.
Yeah, about how to be a porn professional instead of a Dylan Tuck with your Norx out.
I like it.
How to get your foot in, so to speak.
So to speak, rather. Turbo, send me the link through the group chat. So I can shove it into the show notes.
Of course. It is about 14 minutes long, and it is probably a very interesting 14 minutes. It gives you a brand new perspective about the people you have been bashing the bishop to.
I may use this for my thing of the day for next week. But I'll get to that a little later. Thade, do you have something for our happy audience?
I have nothing. I really have nothing. Yeah, okay. I thought that I would be the only one with glass, and I'm not even that. So I'm really just, you know, baggage at this point.
Well, I have regular glasses, so I suppose you can look down at me as some sort of prehistoric pleb.
I also have regular glasses, so actually, I just picked these up yesterday. I'm actually quite pleased with them.
I'm thinking about all the things I wish I'd spent $1,500 on instead of these.
I don't know. I don't think I'd have much of a regret if I got.
Oh man. I've got horrible buyer's remorse.
Oh, no. That's the worst thing.
It is terrible. But, you know, hey, grin and bear it.
Hey, you've got glass.
Yeah, right.
Nelson, have you... Well, in lieu of Thade having something to plug, Nelson, do you have anything else?
Yeah, coincidentally, I have a very old thing of the day.
Oh?
Let me take you back in time to a world of imagination.
And this is where I'm going to cue up a harp glissando to...
Yes. When Wired Magazine... Before Wired Magazine was a website, and before it was a magazine, there was Mondo 2000.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Mondo 2000, oh, damn. Yeah.
It is a very old thing of the day. It was to Wired what... I really don't have any comparison.
Don't always go for the analogy.
Yeah, it was just a hacker zine. It was all of the cyberpunk writers contributed. And it was
a bigger version of the Hacker Quarterly, perhaps?
I actually have my copy of the 2600 right here. But it was, I believe even before 2600, I might be wrong in that, but it was definitely, 2600 was to, like the again. MIT yeah. types as Mondo is to the Berkeley people.
Okay.
Which is actually a...
I have to take your word for that.
Yeah, Mondo was definitely a more through the scanner darkly kind of PK Dick style of techno-futurism. It was very druggy. It was very, like, you know, whoa, cyberpunk, war-driving kind of crazy art.
Ah, huh.
And I highly recommend, if you can find it, finding some old issues of it, because it shows what all of these people, you know, Burroughs, let me just see some of the people that were contributing in this issue. Man, they're so cool, they don't even have bylines.
Oh, man.
Here we go.
And I think I know what inspired this plug, or thing of the day, I suppose, one of the two, is because I sent Nelson the exact image that I was speaking about before of the future cyberpunk sort of chap.
And yes, he did. Strapped
with all this mad garbage. And it is, in fact, I only noticed after Nelson started talking about this, at the bottom of the page, it has a Mondo 2000 thing wrapped around the page number.
Yeah, it is. It basically the big names in cyberpunk, you know, Gibson, various other people, all either contributed to it or were kind of aware of it and in the same groups of people. And it is what their vision of the future was in, like, that time.
Okay.
It's right. Very similar to the, like, the people that made the Principia Discordia and other kind of, like, yippie things. It's very cool. I like internet lore, and this is definitely
internet lore.
It's like, what is that, like, up there with, like, Zombocom?
Right.
Yep.
All right, well, for my...
internet lore, I'm just imagining, like, Data from Star Trek's brother just, like, browsing Reddit at hyperspeed.
This is a magazine that would print this picture.
Oh, what?
If I owned a magazine right now, I would print that picture.
Oh, that's Bill Gates superimposed on...
Yeah.
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Maybe.
Yep. I'm pretty sure
recognize
this is,
those yeah. swole muscles anywhere.
All right. So finally, my thing of the day is actually my thing of the day. Back in the beginning of January, I started a video series that goes up typically every weekday. This week was kind of a wash because I came down with some sort of throatitis. But what it is that every weekday I put up a short video, about a minute and a half, where I recommend something cool or interesting that you might want to check out. It's up on my YouTube channel, the same place where if you are watching this video stream, you will find it right there alongside of it. It's called thing of the day, and I do recommend you guys check it out.
It is actually a good show. I've been enjoying it on a regular basis.
I have as well.
I know that Jason from, I almost said Friday Night Party Line, goddammit.
Atomic Trivia War 9000.
Yes, ATW9K, he's been enjoying it.
Hooray, I'm useful.
You know better Zoidberg than I do.
Well, I was watching a lot of videos of Billy West doing Zoidberg, so.
Oh man, really Billy West. Billy Love West.
What about what episode's your favorite, Chirp?
Of?
Thing of the Day.
Oh, Thing of the Day. I think at this point it is probably the one with watches.
Ah.
About time and time zones and business.
That was fun to make.
Was that the one with the video of the guy talking about from Computerphile, I think it was?
That's the one.
That one I really like. That actually turned me on to Computerphile.
Computerphile is great. What about you, Nelson? What episode did you like?
No, I have to say that was the one.
That was the one?
I mean, the other ones were good, but that one, like, because it not only was a cool thing, but also turned me on to more cool things in kind of like a branching way. I think that's the best the best thing that Thing of the Days do.
Yeah.
I also really liked the sudden escalation of values of the pictured watches. Because I'm looking at it, it's like,
that video wasn't for the Computerphile one. That one was for the documentary about watches.
Mm.
Are you sure?
I'm 90% sure.
Those were two separate ones.
Yeah.
Okay, I must have mixed them up together, because I enjoyed the documentary of watches one.
Okay.
I'll have to check it out.
Yes, because it's like, there's a $5,000 watch, fair enough, a little Omega, I think it was. There's a Breitling, about $8,000. Then it's just like out of nowhere, there's like a $400,000 watch.
Well, you know, I don't...
Like, yeah, right,
I don't wear watches, so I have like no idea about what different brands of watches should cost. I just searched on Flickr for Creative Commons licensed images of these three different watch manufacturer names I just happened to remember. So,
The only reason I know about watches is because it's a handy thing to know.
I mean, I've got a watch over here. It's actually the same watch I used in the video that I have no idea what it is even. What is it? It's like a Pratt. What is it back in the... It's a Pratt. It is a...
So is the owner.
I can't even tell. It doesn't even... I can't even read it.
Oh, trust me. Everyone can tell.
The watch is covering it. Anyway, whatever. The hands of it anyways. Anywho, so that's my thing of the day. My thing of the day is my thing of the day videos. So you should go check it out and subscribe. But anyways, it's been a great show. Once again, thanks, guys. It's great to have such a good assortment of people on the show for the New Year's. Hooray!
All right.
Whee!
Whee! It's a great, great show. Thanks again for coming
actually,
on.
Actually... In your time zone, we are recording this on Chinese New Year.
Ah.
So go out and see if you are watching live, go and watch some lion dances and people setting off big, long strings of firecrackers and go and eat some food with meat that's unidentifiable in it.
I'm not going to go to Chinatown right now. I want to play with my 3D printer.
Do it, you big sook.
Hey, Chinese New Year will always happen, but like getting this thing going like right now, that's only now. Anyways, and I'm hungry besides, so I'm going to go eat dinner.
I'll see
you guys later. Thanks thanks for coming on another great episode of Friday Night Party Line.
You've been listening to Friday Night Party Line with me, your host, Victor Frost. For show notes, archives, news, and more, check us out at FridayNightPartyLine.com. And don't forget to like us on Facebook, where you can get information on times and dates of our live streams. This show is recorded in front of a live YouTube audience and is a product of Minimum Job Studios. All rights reserved.